Welcome to Women in B2B Marketing, a show where CMOs, VPs of marketing, and all strong women leaders in B2B discuss their top tactics, strategies, and tips for building high-performing teams, leveraging trends, and ultimately rocking their marketing careers. Made by and for women, insightful for all. I'm your host and 15-year B2B marketer, Jane Serra. Let's dive in. Okay, thank you everybody for joining us for another episode of Women in B2B Marketing. Today, I have a LinkedIn friend turned real life friend who I'm so excited to meet in real life over Riverside today, Masuma Memon, who has been in B2B marketing on the content side for over 7 years. She has some great content. I highly recommend you follow her on LinkedIn. And she's done content with companies like Shopify, Vimeo, and Calendly. So excited to have you on the show, Masuma. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I'm really looking forward to our chat today.
Yeah. I love how LinkedIn brings people together. Like we've chatted in comments and over DMs a few times. And it's just so cool to put a real moving face to the name.
Yep. Tons of collaborations and networking to do with LinkedIn. Basically Twitter for me before LinkedIn. But I think I moved. Twitter was a lot of fun. You know, before everything happened.
Back when it was Twitter.
I meet a ton of friends. And I also have a friend who I ended up meeting in real life, like in person. And we meet up every other month now, just because of Twitter.
Oh, I love that. That's amazing. Oh, so cool. If you ever come stateside, let me know.
I would love to get together.
Yeah. One thing I love to start out with is with all my guests is how did you get into the lovely world of B2B and B2B marketing?
Okay. I think most people who have a background in writing in marketing would tell you they got into it by they stumbled over it. So that was my story as well. So I was going through a rough patch in my life. And then a friend said that, why don't you write? And I've always wanted to write since I was a child. I thought the only way I could break into writing was to write a bestseller novel. So I would be spending time on Goodreads and reading tons of novels. It's also one of my pastime activities. I used to practice a lot of creative writing. So my friend was like, you can do some of content writing. It's close to creative writing. And so I started with some agencies. They would pay pennies at that point, but I figured out how creative writing and writing for the web were different, and that's how I paved my way into B2B marketing. So first it was not very niche, and then it was niche into B2B SaaS, and then figuring out how the B2B world works, and then what these SaaS jargon is. So what is churn and what is ARR and all of that stuff. That is how I made my way into B2B marketing.
Oh, I love that. Are you still writing on the side, creative writing, like books or fiction or anything like that?
No, I don't know. There's been some sort of a blog since last I wrote that was published, actually, a short story. There were two short stories that were published locally. And that was the time when I was starting my career. And then for some reason, I've had a writer's block of sorts, although I don't really believe in writing blocks, but I think it does apply to creative writing. Those words, they just don't come. It's a lot of description over there and you need to spend time on it. So yeah, I haven't written in a while.
Oh, that's so cool though. I'm gonna look up your books. That'd be so cool. A good friend of mine writes fiction and I'm just in awe of anybody who can do that and come up with these stories. But
I love it.
Storytelling is the basis of all good B2B content creation as well. True. So you're getting to apply your creativity into something that generates business and connects people with the products and services they need. So very cool.
Yeah, you're going to practice that muscle just little.
Yeah. How have you seen your own application of this creative storytelling? And even we were saying before we turned the mics on, the B2C, applying B2C into B2B. How have you played that out from your experience?
I think it's more about talking to the human. So a lot of people are like B2B and B2C are different when it comes to writing, but I feel there's not much difference because at the end of the day, it's all human to human. So it's not B2B and B2C, it's more H to H where you're talking to humans. So and just stop thinking like it's a mindset game where you don't feel like you are talking to an audience, but to one person. So every time I'm writing anything, be it my newsletter or a client piece of content, I am always focusing on consciously writing to one person. That makes a big difference when you're writing for an audience versus mm-hmm. when you're writing to one person and you know what their struggles are. Yeah.
I love that. So you, when you're starting to work on a new piece or a new piece for a new client, yeah. you think of one person that you're writing for?
Yeah. So I, among the first few things that I ask clients when I onboard them is who your target reader is, and, you know, be open and give me as much information as you can about the reader. There are certain verticals that I'm usually writing in. So you'd see me writing about video marketing. You'd see me writing about creative partnerships, retail, and all of that. In many of these, I can feel sense. For example, if we're talking about e-commerce, I know that I am in a way as part of the audience. So I'm really empathetic. I put myself in the reader's shoe when I'm writing and when I'm reviewing content in particular, because you have to really think about not being pushy in terms of introducing your product and the content and then solving their problem, not just in terms of providing value to them, but also actionable value. So we overuse the word in B2B where we talk about valuable content. So I like to think of it as if you want to emphasize or focus on value, just make it actionable value so that people can actually take the steps after they're done reading the piece.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Agreed. I love that term for this. I'm writing this down. Sorry, everybody. The actionable value. Because one rule for me, whenever I create content, I try to apply this rule for this podcast, but also for work, whenever I'm creating a webinar or a content piece or my team is creating something, I want there to be something tactical, like tactical takeaways from whatever we produce. So there's that value. I love having a mix of, okay, inspiration, high level strategy, but also what's a takeaway that I can go and do or have someone on my team do right after this piece. Sure. So something tangible. I like the actionable value.
Even with pieces that inspire, there's still some actionable stuff that go into it. So it's not actionable in a tangible sense. So it's more in a sense of maybe a mindset shift. So say your story inspires me and I have a slight mindset shift where I'm like, okay, let me just stop getting out of my own way. So I feel like those takeaways, they're everywhere, no matter what piece of content you're creating.
Yes. I'm going to use that to go into a different path and then we'll come back to content because there's a ton to share here. But getting out of our own way. You and I were talking about this too over LinkedIn, but like I had to get out of my own way to start this podcast. I had wanted to do it for years and I had that whole imposter syndrome saying, who wants to hear from you? Who are you to do this? Getting in your own way. And it took time to just do it and get out there.
Yeah, true.
And you had a similar experience with your newsletter. Can you talk us through that?
So I wanted to write my newsletter for the longest time. After Twitter, it was like the next step. When I started out on Twitter, it was almost around the time when I was starting my career. So it was a lot about validating my ideas, figuring out how much I know in the industry by joining the relevant conversations, right? But then after Twitter, like I validated and I'm like, okay, no, I'm good enough. And then those clients are coming up and then you get over the initial idea when you're starting out that, no, I have enough potential value to offer in the services that I offer. And I have enough industry knowledge to share as well. That is when I started thinking that I wanted to write a newsletter and I want to see if my Twitter audience would be interested and would want to be in a owned space. Because even since I started social media, it's always been about being on a rented platform and being on an owned platform. Yes. So I had one rented platform. Yes. I wanted one owned one as well. But it took me about 1.5 years just figuring out what the format would be ideal because, like I told you, I'm empathetic in my content production processes. So I put myself in the reader's shoes. So I did not want to create another newsletter that's just long or it doesn't get read or it's just crowding their inbox. So it took me a very long time to come to the core conclusion that I will be talking about what and then how I'll be talking about it. And it all turned out into making this goal for myself that it's going to be a 2 to 5 minute read only. So ideally 2 minutes. So, you know, people just want to quickly read and leave with one takeaway. That's it. And even then, my promise to myself was it has to be something actionable. Otherwise, if it's too much theory, it's already out there. I don't want to add to the noise.
Exactly. I'm thinking of the same thing. First of all, congrats on growing your newsletter. Can you share any performance of like how long have you been doing it now?
I think it's about 1.5 years or something. But yeah, we are amazing. It's a weekly newsletter. So it's about, I'm on issue 104 now.
Wow, congratulations. Yeah. I hope you took time to celebrate 100, right?
I actually didn't, but I did take a time to celebrate the fact that the newsletter was featured as one of the best marketing newsletters in our industry by Forbes. So that was like,
huge for me.
Yeah.
Congratulations. Okay, we're going to dive into newsletters more then, because so I was just mentioning to you, I've been toying with the idea of starting a women in B2B marketing newsletter for a couple reasons. One, you just mentioned as well, like the owned versus rented. Yeah. Hopefully podcasting will always be here. Spotify, love you. Apple Podcasts, great. But whenever I get content out there, I have no idea who's listening other than those of you who, thank you so much, DM me on LinkedIn and message me, connect with me. Please do. I love it. It makes my day. But whenever people, that's really the only way I get to know who's listening.
Yeah.
Another way to find out who my audience is, I was thinking of just creating a newsletter so I could start to build that and share more information. And also, I'm a visual learner, but I'm an audible. I listen to podcasts versus watching on YouTube. But some people are very much, they like to learn through reading, right? So to tap into a new audience through newsletters too. So A, everyone tell me if you want me to create this newsletter, message me and let me know if I should or not. But B, Masuma, where do I get started? What did you learn through your journey so far? What's step one?
Okay, so for creating a newsletter, it would be reflecting on what your goals are. So I did not realize this when I was starting out. But is your goal thought leadership, authority building, or is it to monetize the community that you've built? These are two different goals. So on that, you will be selecting your email service provider. Services like Substack, the one that I currently use, superb for thought leadership content. They're super easy to get started with because you don't have to figure out the tooling aspect of it, which was one of the hindrances that I had myself, that I need to figure out MailChimp or I need to figure out any other one. And I did try MailChimp, but I couldn't figure it out, which is when Substack was new and I was like, let me give it a shot. And it was super easy. I'm not big on using tools, so I need something that has good user experience. It's a calm place to begin rather than it makes you feel like you have to figure things a lot out. So just to cut out that mental load, Substack is great for that. But if you plan on down the line, maybe monetizing that audience, maybe you decide that there is some course you want to offer or some premium workshops that you want to offer. In that case, the ideal solution would be someone like Bento or ConvertKit because they let you segment your audience and then send relevant emails to them with the relevant offers.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah. That's good to know. I feel like I need a download on all the different options for newsletter platforms, but this is already a great intro because it makes sense. Like MailChimp, there's a lot you can do with it, right? Because it's a full-blown email platform versus if you just want to have a newsletter and have everything be pretty much done for you to an extent, one of these dedicated newsletter platforms.
You also have to figure out the templates. If you want to save yourself the work and just start writing for your newsletter, in that case, we have Substack, etc. They have the same format for every newsletter that you're sending out. You just have to figure out your newsletter cover image, and that's it. You're ready to go. You're ready to go. Yeah. Well, that's what I struggled with MailChimp because, made by own template, too many options. The feature load gets you if you have one aim only, one goal only for the time being.
Got it. So it sounds like Substack, or depending, like you said, on monetizing. But really to get started, it sounds like Substack is a good option because it just gets you out there without having to make too many decisions. And then you can iterate from there as you grow. If you want more flexibility, you can transition to MailChimp. Or if you want to start monetizing, you can transition to ConvertKit.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay.
And then sometimes tools just get in our way. Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. Because tools are meant to help us and assist us, but sometimes it's like overwhelm and
when we're choosing them, it's one of the excuses we hide behind. Oh, I don't know. I cannot figure out the tooling, so I'm not going to start the newsletter. I did that. So I just want, it's like a very good friend told me, just reduce friction for yourself. focus on that a lot when we are in our marketer's shoes and writing for an audience or creating those marketing campaigns.
Exactly.
But we forget that about ourselves, that we need to cut back the friction for our own selves to make it easy for us, which leads us to our second point, which is what is going to be your newsletter's unique value proposition, right? So what's going to be the reason, like one question, one simple question that you have to honestly answer is, why should your reader be actually reading your newsletter? So it's not easy to answer that. Like, you have to figure out the formatting under it. You have to figure out the messaging under it, the content themes under it. Like, what is making your content worth your reader's time? And in what ways can you make it easy for them to consume that content? Which is why why I chose the 2-minute newsletter format, so that I was making it easy for myself also to write it on a weekly basis, as well as making it easy for the reader to consume the newsletter. It's just quick and ready. You don't have to spend a lot of time on a Sunday afternoon to read the newsletter.
I love that. And how did you test out different days and times for when your newsletter gets sent? Did you test that out, or you found your sweet spot from the start?
No, I actually looked up the research on it, and I found that Tuesdays is one of the best time to read it, which is why I wanted to use Tuesday. And I figured out the time based on my target readers when they are like around, it's 11 a.m. EST, right? So they're not fresh off starting their work, which is when they likely don't want to be reading newsletters. And if they're like me, they just want to dive straight into work. Or if there are people who, because I see a lot of people read the newsletter the next day, which means they're in a different time zone and it's morning at that time, and they know that the newsletter will be in their inbox and they pull it up and then they read it. Because I can find the Substack makes it easy for them to just make little hearts, likes on the newsletter issue. How I can tell. But the feedback comes to me in forms of the email replies, as well as comments on the Substack issue and their hearts. It gives me an idea that the issue is resonating with the readers, right? I picked Tuesday. Friday, I feel like is, honestly, I also asked myself, when is the time when I find myself reading newsletters? And so I checked in with my Twitter audience at that time. I was like, would it be Sunday? What would be a good day for you? And I got a lot about no Sundays, please. Personally, for me also, it's no Sundays. How do you send marketing content? And Saturdays at this point has become overcrowded because everybody felt that Saturday is free and so we should send a newsletter. And now Saturday, there is so many newsletters coming out. And I don't know, for some reason, And for some reason, I felt like Thursday isn't my day because there was this blockade in my head that, do you know James Clear? He's the author of Atomic Habits.
Atomic Habits.
So I'm a fan. His newsletter comes out on Thursday. And for some reason, I felt like people should be reading that newsletter. So I'm not going to a newsletter on that day because they obviously want to read James Clear. So it's not necessary that they're my target audience.
I kind of want to James Clear.
Yeah. But I'm not
going to be reading for James Clear. You're not going to get like, that's I'm his gonna, day.
Yes. That's what. So it ended up being Tuesday. And sometimes if I'm running late or something, I send it on Wednesdays and I don't see a huge difference in open rate or something like that. It's cool.
Yeah. I love that. Two things. One, I want to talk about consistency and how you do that. And if you bulk create and schedule out, or if you write this each week. Yeah, let's go into that first.
Okay. Consistency has been really hard. Right. So first, when I was starting out, it was easy. And everybody who says that they started the newsletter and then they start saying how consistency is important, I feel like when you go past the 50th issue, that's when consistency gets hard, not initially. Because initially you have this motivation to do things, right? So after you get past the 50th issue, it's actually then that consistency gets hard. Because at that point, you've lost the initial momentum, the initial motivation fuel that you had. So what helps me be consistent is interacting with people on LinkedIn and consuming new content, feeding my brain with new books I'm reading, which gives me tons of ideas that I need to share out. So I'm like taking in and then giving it out in my newsletter. So that is one way of staying on top of it. And the second one is, normally what I do is I have all of the ideas. I never bulk create. I cannot do that. I feel it's good for a lot of reasons, but for me, it feels like it's not authentic enough, especially if that newsletter is coming from a person rather than a brand. So I feel like the more I write in real time, the more I can be open about. In my introduction lines, I usually am conversational and I'm telling readers that I am, you know, how I'm working, or there's orange light coming out of the windows, or I'm seeing something. So all this description only comes when you're writing in real time, right?
Yeah.
So I do that. To do that, what I normally do, what I actually bulk produce in a way, is the ideas. So whenever I have them, I note them down in a notebook. But I've started using BetterDocs now, where I am moving my ideation slowly. So it's helping me to have my ideas with notes in one software, and then I can create drafts within that software itself. So there's less tab shifting, and there's less looking between my notebook and the desktop to create the version. Because normally when you create in Google Docs, what happens is you have to go back and forth between you wrote the idea, its synopsis, and then you wrote some brain dumped initial thoughts, and then comes the draft. So you have to go up and down to check out what you wrote. But with BetterDocs, outline on the left, you see your notes on the right, and then in the center, you're writing. So I'm slowly moving from my notebook and desktop version, the Duo, to BetterDocs.
Very cool. And what is the, you said it's called BetterDocs?
It's butter, like butter. They eat the butter you put on the chin.
Wow, BetterDocs. Okay, I'll link to this in show notes if you can send. I'll look it up, but just to make sure I get the right one. BetterDocs, very cool. And another thing is, how have you scaled your newsletter? Getting listed in the top list from Forbes is amazing. That's a huge accolade. So how have you been able to scale this over the past year and a half? What have you done to promote?
Oh, I'm really bad at that. I need to improve. Not to self-improve.
Same.
Because I need to talk more about the things that I'm creating. I shy away. I get in my own way.
Same.
Yeah. But what helps me is usually whenever I can. I used to be better at talking about it when I was on Twitter. So I would give little behind the scenes peeps into what I was doing or what I was working on. So it felt more authentic even to me. Like I wasn't just saying, read my newsletter. Instead saying, you know, I'm working on this and it's making me super excited and I would love your feedback in today's issue. It's for promotion. So far, what has worked for me is sharing behind the scenes content on Twitter. And I think it's I think somebody over Twitter told me that my newsletter was featured in Forbes. So I think that's where it's possible that they read through those tweets and that's how it was featured, maybe. And then the second thing that works, and I'm actively doing it again, is gathering testimonials from people that I want to attract. So I am reaching out to people personally rather than sending out the whole newsletter to everybody throughout the list. I'm reaching out to people personally and asking them what they like about the newsletter and then sharing it slowly and slowly.
Cool. That's a great idea. Is there anything within Substack that lets you... I'm sure they make it easy to share and invite others as a tactic to grow, but is it also, are there any kind of rewards for people inviting a friend? Is that possible?
I don't know. I'll have to look that up, but there's one thing that your question reminded me of is that what Substack does, it lets you refer other Substack issues, right? So there are a handful of Substack creators who are recommending my newsletter. So every time you subscribe, you or somebody subscribes to my newsletter, or someone else, say you recommend, you're on Substack and you're recommending my newsletter. So your subscribers will see what Substacks you are recommending and they can come to my newsletter.
Very cool.
Yeah. So the creator network is
strong. I'm getting excited about the idea of a newsletter now talking to you. So thank you personally. But also I feel like this is such an opportunity. If I do launch Women in B2B Marketing as a newsletter, there's an opportunity there to promote other women founded newsletters like yours. So that sounds really cool within Substack to leverage that and promote other women newsletter creators.
Yes.
Very cool. Okay. I'm definitely going to pick your brain on newsletters after the show as well. I'll keep, if you don't mind, I'll keep picking. But let's go back to content because I'm so curious of so many things here. And step one, how do you get started with a new client? I'm sure that it differs case to case and what their goals are, et cetera, but do you have your own process for bringing on a new client? Because you've been doing freelance for 7+ years now, right? So you must have some kind of a framework established.
Yeah, so I like to keep it simple. So it's a network onboarding checklist that I have in place, which typically, it varies case to case, but it typically starts with asking the client what their overarching strategy goals are. Because I work in the SaaS space, it's always asking them what their tool does. And if they can get to me, because it's a requirement that you give me, either give me access to a demo or you give me a demo yourself or you connect me to someone who could give me a product demo. Post that, I'm always asking them if it's possible they connect me to their product marketers or if they have any sort of documentation on their product. So for example, feature cheat sheets and stuff like that, or if they could link me to their knowledge base articles on how to use a tool, etc. So the first step usually is, after I onboard them, is learning about their goals, what they're trying to achieve, where their reader is at in their journey, and how much information they can share with me about their product that they already have, and how much they're willing to open up and connect me with the people who can let me learn more about their SaaS tool. So a lot of times, teams do have documentation on their product, but a lot of times they don't. So they usually take my help in that. So I'm going through their product, talking to the product teams and the customer facing teams to create these certain documents that help them scale their product led content. So more like feature cheat sheets, their positioning docs and all of that. We can go into that detail, but it's like, to answer your question, it's an onboarding checklist that I have, and the questions that I normally ask about are related to their business goals. If they have a content strategy, what their strategy goals and objectives are, and learning about their reader, and finally their tool, the product that they're marketing.
I love that you spend so much time understanding the product, definitely the audience as well, but the product itself and how the audience uses it. I think a few different content writers I've worked with in the past, some have done that, but some, they're just writing on the topic that we want to cover for SEO purposes, and they don't fully understand the product. So I love that you get into that, because to me, it would elevate the writing that you're putting out there, because what's top of mind on both ends that you're connecting here.
True. And it's also the fact that a lot of people that have worked with me on retainers, so it's not usually one-off pieces. Many writers, it's possible one of the reasons they don't take the time to understand the product is because they're thinking it's a one-off piece. But this is something I usually advise clients and people I talk to, is that try to take the time to find the right writer and then stick with them using their services. It's going to save you a bunch of time onboarding that writer, training them about how your product works and what your audience is. And for the writer itself, they can put in more upfront time in understanding your product and then win time. And if it's a sort of a product tool that they can use, for example, I have a lot of clients in the video space. So for example, let's say Veed, I use their tool actively. The team is also really nice. So they're like, okay, there is access. We are going to give you access to all the premium plans and et cetera. So I'm creating videos myself, playing around the tool to see how it works, rather than just using what is already out there to understand how the tool works. That gives you more idea about the tool's strengths and weaknesses. I can tell you why Veed and why not Veed, where it shines and where it doesn't shine, because I've not only studied it, but I have also used it. So that information, it reflects in the writing that you do.
Perfect. We'll put a link in show notes to that platform if you can share it with me afterwards, Masuma. Yeah. That sounds really cool. I want to check it out. I know we were talking a lot about, you coined it as product-led content. We've all heard PLG, but can you walk us through product-led content as you see it and work with it?
Sure. Product-led content to me is any content that features your product. So it could be blog content, it could be webinar content, it could be LinkedIn social media content, it could be videos on your product, right? So anything that is featuring your product and the strategy behind it is devised in a way that you are taking into account not only SEO, but also the use cases your customers are facing and the hesitations they have related to it, the problems that your product is solving. So your product plays a huge role in informing the strategy, content strategy, not just SEO. So that to me is product-led content. Now, some people, there are ways to address it. Some people frame it as bottom of the funnel content. And I've played with the word myself, but I've been testing between product-led content and BOFU content, so to speak. So there is certain people who are more in a Prabhu resonates more with them, and with product-led resonates with a different set of people. And there's also the fact that product-led content is more inclusive. So you can also talk about your product in top of the funnel content. But of course, there's a way to do it so that you're not coming across as salesy, because at that point, you're building your brand and your reader is not in that stage where they're aware of the problem exactly, right? And with Bofu, it's strictly towards the deeper funnel stages. So that is how I think I would summarize product-led content.
Yeah, that's really interesting too, the differentiator there, that you can have product-led content in top of funnel and middle of funnel as well. Yeah. Can you give some examples of some, and it can be super detailed or more high level, but what an example of product-led tofu content would be or look like?
This is a specific framework that I often share. It's a layering framework if you want to introduce your product in tofu content. It can be used in several ways, right? But the gist of it is that when you're talking about a problem, you are giving solutions. Like we started off with actionable value, right? You're providing value to the reader. So you give them one solution, which is the most common solution. Let's say we're talking about making to-do lists. The most easiest way to get you started would be to use sticky notes to create your to-do list, right? But then when you've shared that solution, you also share its downsides, its shortcomings. So the biggest shortcoming of a to-do list, of using sticky notes to create your to-do list, is that they're scattered. You don't have a record of what you've done at the end of your week. And so you cannot tell what you've covered and what you've not covered, or what's missing, right? So you introduce a second solution to it, which is creating a to-do list in notebook. And it solves the problem that the first solution had, which is it's not scattered, it's more in one place. But then you introduce the problem that solution two has, which is, so you're building on layers basically. So with the example that we're talking about in the notebook, the problem is you cannot access it online, you cannot access it on the go, you cannot share your to-do list with your team. So now that you've shared problem one, it's solution one, its problem, then gave a solution explaining how you can overcome the problems that solution one had, by the third solution that you're giving, you can introduce your product. So for example, let's say it's a to-do list app that you have. We can share it as a solution, final solution to the problem. So you've layered it all, explained the possible solutions that you have, and then also explained their shortcomings. So the reader, wherever they are in the journey, if they prefer notebooks or if they prefer sticky notes, they'll know the pros and cons of it, but they will also know that they have more options to choose, for example, your product when they're ready. So that's one way I like to think of adding product mentions within tofu content.
Yeah, so interesting, because you always think tofu like it's awareness. You just want to get them be in the conversation, but these are interesting ways to include it and not be promoting too much in their face too heavily at that point. So very interesting. But ultimately, that's what it comes down to, is you're solving a problem for them in some way, shape, or form. Like you're helping them.
Yeah.
Is there anything in B2B right now that is, I wanted two different sides here, that is working, that you're all about right now in B2B content creation? And is there anything that you're just over, that it's been overdone or it's just not working anymore?
Okay, so what's working, it's definitely a couple of things. One would be product-led content, but while making sure that you're not being overly proportional and while keeping the reader as the hero of the story. So a lot of people, what they do is they make their product the hero of the story, which it is not. It's an asset that helps the hero, which is the reader. So that's product-led content. And the other thing that I see working is it connects to what is not working, basically. So what is not working is just using SEO for distribution. You also need to be active on other distribution channels. Now, for a lot of people, that would mean that creating new content for new channels. But no, what is working, now it comes to the back to the point of what is working in B2B, is you create a content repurposing engine. When you do that, you have content for other channels as well. Yes. And so you're able to create an omni-channel strategy. You provide a consistent experience to your audience on not just one channel, but on multiple channels and in multiple formats.
Amazing. That's really good advice. Do you have any kind of distribution or repurposing examples that have worked for you? Because I think we probably, this is another place where I know I do. So I think a few of us probably get in our own way for repurposing. What are all the different ways? Because I think, okay, if I have a webinar, I can chunk that down into some videos for social. We can share that in our newsletter. It could be an email. But there's other places it can be and other more creative ways you can collab with maybe partners and bring them in. But any interesting or fun ways of distributing your content or repurposing content that you've seen or done yourself recently?
Yeah. I've actually been repurposing my newsletter a lot. So it's been for the last year, it has been powering my LinkedIn content production alongside the podcast that I do. So the way I do it is I go through scripts or the newsletter issue. And instead of cut, copy, pasting from one channel to another, what I do is, for example, my newsletter gives away 3 tips. And I would take those 3 tips and create 3 separate posts, LinkedIn separate posts for it. That's one. Then there is also the fact that a lot of times what happens is when you're doing a webinar or when you're doing a podcast, there are several things that you miss out because you're in the flow. Whatever comes top of your mind, you share that. So go to that transcript and then see where are the areas that you could add more or whatever questions your target, like your attendees questions asked and you couldn't answer those questions and answer them. So you are using repurposing to come up with new ideas, but they're not new as such because that repurposed content is fueling those ideas. And sometimes what happens is, say, for example, I want to talk more in, I forgot to mention a point over here regarding how we can repurpose, right? But I talked about it in the previous newsletter issue. Yeah. So I'm going to combine both these, add whatever new things I've learned because you're always learning. Month over month, you're learning. So updating that content in a way that you're creating new updated content out of it. And then the third would be that the one that I play around a lot with is remixing the content. So this bringing together a couple of issues from the newsletters that I've done. And then it creates a completely new piece of content, but it's actually a repurposed piece of content. Because it all actually started with, I'm not sure if it's SEMrush or SEMrush, however people prefer to pronounce it. So they invited me over to the Twitter space. SEMrush.
I can confirm.
So they invited
me. I just got that figured out last year.
Oh, you did. So they invited me over to their Twitter space last year. And within that Twitter space, there was me and the co-guest, right? And the pointer said the co-guest shared. I had a lot to add on those, but I had to share my own pointers also. So when I was repurposing, I was adding the pointers that I wanted to add to that SME's point of view, right? So that's more content. Yes. One piece of content inspiring tons of new pieces of content. And then there were, of course, a lot of questions that people asked within that Twitter space, and I was answering them in my new LinkedIn posts. So that's how I see repurposing. Less copy-pasting, more ideation and remixing.
I love that. I'm definitely going to take a couple of these tips myself. I love the remixing framework and even just the name of remixing your content beyond repurposing. Very cool just to bring it together once you have a stack of content to go back and do that. And such a good idea that if you have a webinar and somebody, an attendee asks a question on the webinar, even if you answer it, that is something that can be either webinar number 2, a follow-up webinar, or a piece of content that goes on social that's shared out afterwards. There's so many ways to repurpose that. Really good idea.
Yes, I actually helped a client do that. They have a couple of, they have a pool of webinars now. And then I looked through those webinars and I told them, you have all these SMEs in your industry. They're talking, there's a common theme that they're all sharing. Why don't you create an X experts on Y, which is super relevant to your target reader? And they did not have to reach out to new SMEs. They already had that content. They just had to pull it from transcripts and create a new piece of content.
Yes. I see this happening all the time. Like your webinars. I know some people say webinars are dead. I vastly, very strongly disagree. I think webinars are still a huge demand gen and lead gen tool, both, if you do it right. So I'm fully on board. But I think something where we all, many of us, myself included, fall short is that we forget to repurpose all of this amazing content. It's usually 45 minutes at least of quality value adding content. And you do it once and you email it afterwards, but there's so much you can chop that into and repurpose or remix afterwards. So great reminder.
Yeah. And then you can always reformat it. It can be a LinkedIn slide or post.
Well, Masuma, Yes, exactly. I need to get better at that with even with my own show. So with watch this year, guys, hold me to it. Hold me accountable. I need to get better at that with women in B2B marketing and promoting on social. Yeah. I will do it. Yeah. But Masuma, I know we need to wrap up, but thank you so much for joining us. If you can leave us with one more key tip for women in B2B marketing, what would that be?
I think we've been talking about it. This has been coming up throughout the podcast. It would be stop getting in your own way. So the worst that can happen is a no. And that's okay. That's okay. It's completely okay. You wouldn't know it's a no until you ask about it, right? So stop getting in your own way. Just do that thing.
Yes. I love that. When I hear stop getting in your own way, I just see clap emojis in between each word. So stop getting in your own way. I love it. Yes. Thank you so much for joining us. This has been a blast. I feel like we need to have a part two and part three, and I'm definitely going to pick your brain some more over DMs. But thank you for taking the time out of your evening to chat with us today.
Thank you so much. It was lovely chatting with you. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. And all listeners, if you like today's show, like the episode, first of all, connect with Masuma, I assume, on LinkedIn.
Yeah.
And one last thing. What's the name of your newsletter and your podcast so they can look it up, but we'll also put it in show notes.
Okay. So it's for the newsletter. It's the Content Workshop. I'll share the link with you so you can add it. And feel free to connect with me on LinkedIn. I don't do podcasts, but I am on a lot of podcasts, which is exactly how I am running the LinkedIn engine. It's a lot of repurposing that I'm doing.
Perfect. Okay, we'll include all these links in the show notes. And thank you, everybody. And if you like the show, please review, leave a comment, give us a rating, whatever you honestly believe we deserve. And thank you. We'll see you next time. Bye, everyone.